Okay, Annie, up you come. Big cheers for Annie. I'll leave you to introduce what you guys are up to today. Yeah, I'll get it for you, that's fine.
Do I have to stand very close to this? Thank you. Thanks, James. Can I take it out? Is that going to...
Yeah.
Because otherwise, as I turn around, I'm going to lose everybody. Thank you. So you probably heard a greeting there that Julian used on that tape, which was Macheliwa. So I'm just saying Macheliwa, everybody. Those of you who have any knowledge of European languages, same thing is Bom Dia. Very good, which is Portuguese for good morning. I just actually really want to start with another word, another Koti word and another Portuguese word. Koti word is Cachecrela. And the Portuguese word is Muito Obrigada. And that may give you a clue that is thank you. We had an amazing time in Mozambique, but we know that we couldn't have done it without you guys, and that although it was a journey that Julian and I went on alone in one sense, we were just overwhelmed by everybody's support in many different ways. And we're very grateful for that. So we were grateful for the people who came to visit us. Thank you, Ian and Liz. Chris and Elaine, other people as well, not from River. Thank you for all the financial support, from the least to the greatest. It was all appreciated, and we are very grateful for that. Thank you for the prayer, which obviously we just couldn't have done what we did without your support and in prayer. And it was very cool every first Wednesday in the month to know that there were a few people, well, maybe there are lots of people, I don't know, but there were people here praying for us. And also the people who didn't get to the prayer meetings but just prayed anyway. So thank you very much, everyone, for that. And I guess particularly at this time of year when the guys out there faced another famine, thank you specifically for the famine relief, the money that you sent out. £12,000 was about the money that we received in a short space of time. And, hey, we were just so overwhelmed and so grateful for that. And I pass on my thanks and Julian's thanks. I pass on the thanks of the Koti people. Who you'll never meet this side of eternity, but are connected to you guys through your giving. And we were able to be a bridge between here and there. And there will always be that connection. So thank you. So I'm apologising if any of this is repetition for you guys, but there are lots of people here that when we walked back in the first day after our return, I thought, I don't know most of the people here anymore. So if I'm repeating stuff, then please forgive me. But back to the beginning, who are we? You've probably heard our names banded around a little bit. Who are the Koti? Who are these people that we've talked about, you've heard about? When we were out in Moz, Al sent us a DVD with speeches on it, some of the world's great speeches. And one of the ones inevitably was the Martin Luther, I Have a Dream. I suppose for us, you know, our dream to travel, our dream to connect with the world out there was not really our dream, it's God's dream. And it's that dream that God has for humanity, which is expressed in large ways through nations, through tribes, through different people groups. But it's also the small dream, the dream for each one of us as individuals. So God had a dream for the Koti people. God also had a dream for us. And God has a dream for each one of you as well. And if you'll just forgive a little interlude, when I was thinking about this actually in the middle of the night last night, I felt there were just a few people that God wanted to say, I've still got a dream for you. And Mary, Drew, I felt God saying, He's got a dream for you still. Ian and Liz, of course I know your situation, but He has a dream for you. Dave and Laura Van, only half of you here, but God has a dream for you. And there are, you know, God has a dream for so many people in this room. A little bit of my story, or our story, is how God uses everybody. The people who would most qualify themselves and the people who would least qualify themselves. Julie and I have been part of River Church since day one, which is probably about 30 years. No, longer than that. Sorry, my math is not good, even not in these circumstances. So. But, in 1975, River Church was started. We came out of the St. Mary's Youth Club, and I had no idea what God could do with my life, with our lives. Julian was very much involved in church leadership for about 10 years. We got married. We had four children. Life was relatively normal. About 1990, things began to change, and we received a prophetic word that turned our lives around, in as much as it started talking about us living short-term in other nations. You could perhaps argue that with Julian's background, he had spent quite a lot of his summers in his childhood travelling around Europe with his dad and visiting people's houses and places. And also, you know, he would go to missionary evenings in churches with slideshows. We have updated it a little, but it's still the same thing. And he responded in his heart, I think, to that. Whereas for me, the day before, I received a prophetic word saying I would go and live in short term in other nations. I had more or less disqualified myself from every sort of missionary work that existed, be it praying, be it financing, be it staying here, being encouraging, or giving, you know, whatever it was. I thought, no, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. This was a talk, incidentally, that somebody was giving that I disqualified myself from. And yet, you know, Jesus is amazing, and he can do anything with any of us, really. So that's just to give you a little bit of a background, that God has a dream for each of us. And sometimes it's not always easy, but it's worth pursuing the dream with God. Yes, where's the next bit? Yeah, just to fill you in a little bit more on our story, just you may also know, I mean, we've already talked about Lesotho a couple of times this morning, having received sort of prophetic words in 92 about going and living overseas. We found ourselves as a family in Lesotho for 2 years, from 94 to 96. And that was a very big step, as you can imagine, taking four relatively small children to the other side of the world. But we came back from there, still with his heart for mission, still knowing that God had more for us to do, but we didn't really know what the next step was. So we came back here, and I suppose we settled down to a degree, but no doors were opening in terms of going and living somewhere else. So We did some various things. I mean, Julian put himself into, not put himself into, that sounds if he crashed it, sorry. He put his efforts in terms of mission into working in the mission board in River. I was involved quite a lot with 24/7 prayer and boiler rooms. I suppose we just sat and waited really to see what God wanted to do with us. And all the while, God had something prepared for us, which he was doing, carrying on behind the scenes. So
it's a fascinating, amazing, miraculous story. And we've been privileged to be a part of that story and that journey. But we're a family, and part of that, of our family, is Hannah. And obviously, for us, going to such a place so far away was a tough thing to do. But maybe it was different for Hannah, what she got to say to us about her parents going off to where you've just seen. And did she feel abandoned, or what? What did she think about it all, and what was her impression, having actually invested her money and come out and actually spent some time with us in Mozambique as well?
I haven't really thought of anything that I really want to say, because I kind of felt like I wanted Holy Spirit to just kind of talk through me, and I wanted to bring something rather than just kind of tell you a load of information. So I think I learned so much stuff in 2009, because if you don't know, they were away for a year, but then 3 months before that, because they did language training in Portugal. So I was living in our house with people from church who moved in on my own for about a year and 3 months. So it was, finding out that my parents were going was kind of difficult, because you almost expect that being my age, it would be like me moving out, but it was like my parents were moving out of my house. And so part of it was, I was excited. And part of it was just like, how am I going to do this? Because I think actually when they left, I didn't have a job, and I knew I'd have to start paying for myself. So I was kind of like, Jesus, what am I going to do? So it was kind of scary. And the idea of it was like, how is this going to work, basically? But actually, God is really, 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 really good. And I can't say how much God has done in my heart since my parents have been away. And obviously, I mean, I believe he would have done it anyway, but it was more significant for me because I had to go through it on my own. And not on my own, though, because I was just drawn into Jesus' heart so much, because I didn't have my parents to kind of help me out. And 2009 was a really difficult year. It wasn't just all fun and happy and stuff. It was hard. But actually, God is so good that he makes everything work for us good. And even though it was really difficult and I went through some really hard times, God just made everything so much better. And actually, even though it was the most difficult year of my life, it was also the most amazing and incredible year of my life, because God is just a father and he just wants to love us. And that's what he did with me for a year. So I was scared about not having parents and being on my own and feeling abandoned. But actually, I learned so much more what it means to be a child and to have parents who love you, because God just took me and he just loved me for a year. And I'm just in such a completely different place to where I was before they left. And I feel so much closer to Jesus. And I'm just a complete crazy lady now for God. I'm just like, yeah. So the experience has been incredible. And my parents said before they went that because it was a God thing and that God was calling them to do it, it wouldn't just be that they were going and God was going to do good things with them. They knew that as they left us children, which I know was really difficult for them, that actually it would bless us so much as well, because in all different situations, God manages to just bring the good out and stuff. So I learned so much, and I learned a lot about who my parents are, and that kind of when you're a little kid, you're like, I want to do what my mum and dad do. But I actually still do want to do what my mum and dad do when I grow up. And I'm so lucky to be able to say that, because my parents are doing the stuff that I want to spend the rest of my life doing. And it's just such an encouragement, because I have so many friends whose parents are kind of like out of the church and split up, and they're like working out life on their own. But actually I just have this amazing, parents who just go and are just doing what I want to do. And not just in terms of mission, but also in terms of the way that they love Jesus and that they love people. And I'm just blown away by how God can say something to them, like move to the other side of the world and leave your friends and leave your family. And then just like being, you know what, Jesus, we love you so much that we're just going to go where you want us to go. And we just want to chase you. And it's just taught me so much about the love of Jesus and how he just wants to take us and just love us, and that God does have a plan for you even when you feel like you're being abandoned and that God's kind of leaving you. I remember before my parents left, I was like, God, what are you doing? I'm not going to have any friends. I'm not going to have any family. What is going on? And actually he put so many people around me that were just able to look after me and to love me. Like, I don't know if I would have been able to get through last year without Dave and Chloe, like my new amazing parents who looked after me and stuff. And it was just, Jesus is just so good. He's just so good. And he just wants to know each and every single one of you individually. And in the times when it's hard, he doesn't want you to run away. He wants you to run into him, because he can make the most difficult situations and the most heartbreaking situations the best situations that you have ever been through, because that is how good he is. And he works in the heartbreak and the rubbish and the sucky times, and he just makes them the best. I don't understand how it works. Like, I don't get it. He's just so good. So yeah, I don't know if I actually shared about what you wanted me to share, but okay. Thank you, Jesus and parents.
We're going to have an evening in February where we talk a little bit more about like the stuff we did. But it's interesting to me this morning that actually the stuff we did is probably the least important thing. Of our story and where we've been and what we've connected with. People over the last few weeks have asked me frequently some FAQs, frequently asked questions. And one of those is like, what was the hardest thing, the toughest thing that you did and or saw, and what was the best? And for me, the hardest thing, on a Wednesday, you saw we would gather with 40 leaders. And one Wednesday, I'm sitting in a leaders meeting, and there's 40 or 50 guys there. And they give a report, each one from the 14 zones that they represent. The first one, and I've learned to speak Portuguese, so I'm following their Portuguese in terms of what they're saying. So I'm not getting all of it because I'm not super fluent, but I can catch it. And the first one stands up and he says, well, in my village this week, 13 of our folk have died, and mostly from cholera. He sits down. Next guy stands up. Oh, in my village, 25 people died this week. The police started attacking us. We couldn't stay in our huts at night. We had to hide in the bush and then come back. And then because of the famine, because we've got no food, there's people dying from hunger. Next guy stands up, same story again. Next guy stands up, same story again. In my business life, I have been in many meetings. Business meetings, leadership meetings. In my church life, I've been in many sorts of different meetings. But I've never been in a meeting where people have been sharing stuff that was so significant, so fundamental and so important. When they'd finished doing their stories, the leaders turn around to me and say, Julian, what would you like to say? And I can't remember what I said. But I did say that we would pray for them. And we prayed like mad. And then we obviously sent some emails out to you guys amongst others. And within 10 days, we had about £12,000 in our bank account, which we hadn't had the 10 days before. But within that period of time, another Wednesday had happened. And that Wednesday, the same thing happened again. The guy stood up again and said, this is what's going on. And Julian again was asked to say what he thought about it. That happened for about four Wednesdays. And you begin not to look forward to what you're going to be doing. But the positive thing about it was that you guys sent that money, and through miraculous things happening, we were able to get some grain. The government had secured grain in a big warehouse in a big city, and when we went, they sent the lorry to pick up the grain. They said, no, you can't have it, because the government has secured it. You're not allowed. We're not allowed to sell you any. So we spent three or four days with the guys driving around trying to find somewhere to buy the grain at a sensible price, because then the Indian businessmen started increasing all the prices. So that as, and so there's that sense of the money's running away through our fingers because we can't buy what we want to buy. The price is going up. We want to get it there. We secured the grain, got a lorry on the way back. The road had been washed away, and they had to work overnight to rebuild the road and get the lorry through. So my worst moments were in those meetings, listening to those stories. And they were my friends by then. They weren't just people on a picture. They were my friends. A couple of the best moments, because probably that's a good thing to hear as well, isn't it? Worst and best. Best moment, Julian driving that vehicle that you saw, that baccy, absolutely full of grain, through the sand. And it's a bit like the snow we had recently. You know, it's that the car is sledging through the sand due to the weight. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a good day. This is a good day. Because here I am driving to this little village to drop off a shed load of grain for these kids who are starving hungry. It's a good day. So thank you for making that good day possible for me. Another highlight, and I think I want to sort of finish on this really. When we left, Annie and I had been thinking about what we wanted to do, and independently, we felt that we wanted to wash the guys' feet. So we asked them for a bit of a celebration. We paid for a goat to be killed, and the normal African style, and we had loads of food out for the guys. And at the time, the water was off in the city, so there was no water working, so we took some water with us from our house, carried it from our house to the meeting. And we got a little plastic bucket and some soap, and Annie and I knelt down on the ground, and the leader and his wife would sit in front of us, and we washed their feet. And it was really, really powerful. One thing was, their feet were actually dirty. You know, like, our feet are pretty clean, aren't they? So when it comes to, like, foot washing, it's not really a sensible thing to do, you know, because they don't actually need that much washing. But these feet were really filthy dirty. And we worked away at cleaning their feet. And as we began to do it, the power went off. So the electric went out across the city. So then we're doing it by candlelight. And Annie said to me, there's something spiritual that's happening here. There's powers that are being broken. And God is doing something by us doing what we're doing here. And we finished washing their feet. And then at the end they said, you must sit down now and we'll wash your feet. And that's like one of the best things that anybody has ever done for me. And one of my best mates there, the father of that work, the guy that you saw with the little hat on, Victor, and his wife, knelt down and washed their feet, washed my feet. Bad things continue to happen. Out there, one of my mates called Leeway, son of Vitor that I've just spoken about. Leeway is a Koti name that means stone. In other words, it means Peter. He's died from HIV/AIDS, and he was leading our agricultural project out at the Mashamba. So bad things continue to happen, but we know that there's a God who answers our prayer, hears our call, and understands us. And I've come to the conclusion that to all these problems and all these challenges, I don't have any answers. And the world too often wants a logical, complete, articulate answer to this. What's the answer to the problem in Haiti? There ain't one. But there is a response that we're called to make. So this is what I want to leave you with this morning, really, each and every one of you, is what is your response? What is your response to what Jesus has done for you on the cross? What is your response to the wealth that you've been given? What is your response to the health that you have? What is your response to the education that you've received? I believe that we're educated not for ourselves, so that we can get a better job and a brighter hope and a bigger car and a bigger future. But we're educated so that we can make a difference in the world that we live in. And I want to challenge you this morning. You've heard Hannah's story. You can't abandon your children if you're following God, because God looks after them. Her mum, when we got on the aircraft, cried because we were going. It wasn't a, well, hey, we're off to do God's work and what's the rest of it? People will say to me, wasn't it a wonderful thing you did? And I'll say, no, actually, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. And if you gave me a choice, I wouldn't go there. Who wants to sit in a meeting where people are telling you that all your friends are dying? Who wants to see people being carried through the streets? You don't want to, do you? But it wasn't my choice, it was God's. And I'm very grateful that he got me to go and do it. So thank you for your support. We'll be having an evening in February where we talk a bit more about that. But just pursue God, like Hannah said, and do what it is that God's calling you to do. Don't sit in your seat and think, oh, well, that's somebody else's job. That's their role. That's their responsibility. Each one of us here, sitting in this room this morning, has a response to make. And I don't know what your response is, but please find out what that one is. Thanks, James.
Let's all stand up, guys. Julian's right. We've all got a response to make. And I want us just to spend some time now thinking about what that is. I don't think it's possible to make no response. You could make a decision as your response that it's not for you. That's a response. But I think we've all got a response to make now. And for those of you who are Christians, start talking to the Lord and say how you're feeling. Kristen came to me while Julian was finishing up, saying something that I felt as well, which was that it's really important to put a marker down. You may not know exactly what your call is now. You may not know exactly what your response should be now. I'd be very surprised if you have it all worked out in your mind, having sat there and listened to what's been said and seen the pictures. I'd be very surprised if you knew exactly where you were going, when you were going, how long you were going for, what you were doing, what your call was. Is it here? Is it there? I'd be surprised. But you can put that marker down and say, Lord, I'm not sure, but I do want to respond. I do want to take seriously that call. And that marker could be that you want just to go and pray with Julian and Annie and Hannah and Di and a handful of others who are part of the mission team. And they're just going to be over here while we worship. You may just want to go over and have them pray over you, impart something of what God has called them to. You may want to ask the Lord for a number and double it and then give that away. You may want to talk to somebody. Just put that marker down. And, you know, this morning's been a lot about overseas, but we're also called to here, and we're called to the unreached people groups here. And I wanted to keep you as a church updated in terms of what we are doing with the project on the Larchfield estate that I mentioned a couple of months ago. We are planning to put together a blog, so you'd be able to go online any time and see what the latest developments are. so that we don't do it always on a Sunday morning. But I just wanted to let you know that things are progressing. We continue to talk to the council about working with them in partnership, in building a community centre in Desborough Park on the Larchfield Estate. What it means for us as a church, we're still unpacking. We don't know, we haven't got all the answers yet, but we are trying to respond to a people group who need Jesus, and we want to see where that takes us. So we will keep you updated. No decisions have been made, nothing's final. We will constantly be consulting and talking. It's a long-term project, but we are responding and choosing to invest in the community here. And I just felt, while Julian was talking, that actually there was something amazing about the way in which the gospel was transforming that community. And Annie turned to me at one stage and just saying, it's incredible the fact that the message is really clear. It's not that you turn from Islam. It's not a battle of Christianity versus Islam. But it's a conscious decision to say that I will follow Jesus and I'll repent of my sins. And we'll see where that life with Jesus takes us. And I felt when that was being said that there is a call on some people here, and maybe you want to respond to that and come and get prayer, but there's a call on some people here to find the culturally relevant message for Maidenhead in the 21st century. To find that message that is really powerful, that says the equivalent to what we saw out in Coty, for the Coty people, but the equivalent that says, I'm going to make Jesus relevant for my people group. Because it isn't easy out there, but it's really difficult here as well. And we need the Lord to help us with that. And we need the Lord to raise up a church of people who can engage in our community in a culturally relevant way. So we're going to spend a bit of time worshipping before we pick up kids and finish the meeting. If you would like to respond, please come and be prayed for by the team over here. But certainly do take the opportunity to make a response. We're going to pass the baskets around for our giving. This can be a part of your response this morning in terms of supporting what we do as a church outside of this building, outside of our gatherings, the way that we bless the communities, the way that we send people. So this is as much a response as anything else that you might choose to do.